2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Shut him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 12 show, brought to you by www.south-beach-shopping.com. That's South Beach Shopping, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House, and Big Ten and Penn State expert and a tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football, the Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's going on, Billy? How you guys doing? Terry, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Doing
pretty good.
Doing
man.
Great. Well, fellas, I'll tell you what, we got a lot to talk about again. There's six spots that they announce on this college football show, the NCAA or the committee does, and there are seven left that are either unbeaten or have one loss. 6-1 loss and one unbeaten. So we'll have to see who's left out when they get through here shortly tonight. Our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Well, fellas, I say it every week, and I don't get disappointed any week. College football certainly didn't disappoint us again last weekend. As we mentioned, we're down to one unbeaten team. Only Florida State remains. Be interesting to see what the committee has to say about the Seminoles and, in the next half hour. And they barely escaped unranked Miami. Miami gave them a fit, as we talked about last week, was a possibility. So we'll see what happens to the Seminoles. Alabama took care of their business, knocking off number one Mississippi State at home. Number two Oregon sits poised to take over the top spot, but will it be Alabama, will it be Oregon, or will it be undefeated Florida State? And Terry, your team that you were real high on, Arizona State, they went up to Oregon State and they crashed, so they're gone. Georgia put it on Auburn, while Wisconsin just crushed Nebraska in a big way. So let's start a little different before the show gets going, and let's go with our top six real quick before they announce it on the TV. Terry, give us your rundown.
Yeah, if I'm looking at the top six right now, I'm going to go with just looking at it from the standpoint of how I view the best six teams in the country at this point. I would probably go Alabama number one. I would go Oregon number two. I like Florida State at three still. And I'm probably going to go Mississippi State right now at number four. That obviously will play out differently, depending on how things kind of transpire. But if we're just talking about, the four best teams based on resume, based on eye test and all that, that's probably where I would go with the top four. And then I would have TCU and Baylor. I would have Ohio State and then TCU on the outside looking in. But at the end of the day, when the playoffs are when the committee's there and they're putting the playoff teams together, I have a feeling that Ohio State will get in there when it's all said and done. So if I had to give my final four when it's all said and done, I'd go Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State, and Florida State to play in the playoffs in the inaugural playoffs this year.
Keith, what do you think?
Well, can I say ditto or what? I'm interested to see where they put Michigan State or Mississippi State, because they deserve to be in the top four this week still. I mean, their only loss is to probably the best team in the country. I think they'll be in it tonight. Ohio State has not made it into the Final Four, in my opinion, as of yet, but they will, as Terry said, because this stuff's going to work its way out. And then you have I see UCLA jumping in there at number nine right now, jumped up two spots there, playing USC this week, who just got ranked. So you're going to get down into
upset.
The – Huh?
upset.
Yeah. I mean, you're gonna get, what that's gonna do is put a lot more juice on the Pac-12 title game and give Oregon or whoever wins that game a lot more juice to try and get into that Final Four. So, I'm looking at the same thing that Ohio State is, and a lot of stuff's going to happen for Ohio State. I saw that Michigan State is back there at 11 right now. So, we'll see what happens with Ohio State. I think they're going to end up in the Final Four if they win out. Florida State, I just don't see Florida beating them. And I thought Duke would have had a chance in a major league upset in the conference title game, but I just see Florida State in that Final Four and Alabama and Mississippi State right now.
Well, I'm going to give you mine, and I am not going to agree with you, and that's probably not good for the teams that I'm going to talk about, the way my picks have gone the last 2 weeks. But I am going number one, Florida State. As much as I hate to say that, I can feel a hit from each one of you guys come on each side of my head. But I thought they should have lost. I think they should lose every week. And here we are sitting here near the end of the season. They've beaten everybody on their schedule. Somehow they pull it off. I'm going Florida State 1, Oregon 2, Alabama 3, and I will go either – I think Ohio State will get in for all the reasons you guys say, but I'm going to put Baylor and Ohio State right there at that 4 spot with TCU next and Mississippi State. I didn't think they played very well. I thought Alabama put it to them. Either Alabama's that good or Mississippi State just didn't play that well. But other than that late touchdown that made the score look a little closer than it was, I see Mississippi State falling. So let's see. The experts have Alabama. They have Alabama 1, Oregon 2, Florida State 3.
And they got to go TCU here.
And I'm still not understanding the TCU over Baylor pick. I'm not getting that one yet.
I still don't either. It's in my crawl from last week still. Is this Mississippi State or is it going to be TCU?
Or Ohio State.
Or a commercial.
Look at this.
Hey, guys, as it pertains to the TCU and Baylor conversation, what's interesting is a lot of the analysts have kind of covered that over the last week and a half now. And they've all kind of put it in the context of, well, as of right now, based on TCU's resume, even though they lost head-to-head, TCU is in that position because they have a better resume. But when everything is played out and Baylor plays Kansas State, if Baylor beats Kansas State and their resumes are more equal in the eyes of the committee, that Baylor will have more of a say in it in terms of their head-to-head game because the resumes will then match, and thus the head-to-head becomes more relevant. So it'll be interesting to see if Baylor can work their way through their schedule. They beat Kansas State that last week of the season. They're going to be in a situation where the head-to-head game will be important, and I think the committee will make a sensible decision and probably put Baylor over TCU if it comes to that.
Well, Mississippi State is number 4, so if everybody wins out, Alabama plays Mississippi State again in round 1. That's interesting.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Alabama's still going to play Auburn and Georgia. Mississippi's going to play Mississippi State. But then would they allow somebody who doesn't play in a conference final? it's just weird how it's going to work out, guys. I mean, right now,
well,
Alabama,
as we've been talking about for weeks, it has all really taken care of itself, as we've said it would. It really has. So who was 5 there? TCU was 5?
I don't think they did it yet. They didn't say anything yet.
Bill, I wanted to ask you a question. So what if the season plays out, Ohio State wins the championship? Forget about, what other people think of the Big Ten or what the perception is. But in your mind, both, Keith and Bill, what if Mississippi State didn't win their conference and Ohio State did, and Ohio State didn't get in over Mississippi State? What would you think about that?
I would say sorry for your luck. I mean, I'd look at Ohio State. Here I look at Ohio State. They got beat opening night. We talked about this weeks ago. They lost Braxton Miller on opening night. They played a freshman quarterback. They got beat, And then they've turned around. They've got it together, got better every single week. And if they are sitting there, what would they be, 13-1, 12-1, 13-1?
Yep.
And having
yep.
won the championship, beaten, I guess it's going to be Wisconsin, winning that game, I would see no reason why, because they're not in the SEC, that they shouldn't be there.
Right.
They will actually have the longest win streak in the country, I would guess, at that point, if that were to happen. Because they lost opening
except
night.
Florida State.
Well, right, Florida except State. For Florida State, yeah.
Yeah, but, we've said it from the start. I don't think that in one loss Ohio State team, I don't think that the NCAA will not include an Eastern Midwestern team, in my opinion. They just can't afford to do it. I mean, guys, it's about the money. The NCAA is about one thing, and that's the money. I mean, it's just that's the bottom line of this whole situation. And if they would take a one-loss Mississippi State team who doesn't play in a conference title game over a one-loss Ohio State team who wins the conference, and Wisconsin's not playing bad after what I saw them do to Nebraska last week. My God.
It is TCU, Ohio State, Baylor.
TCU, Ohio State, Baylor,
TCU 5, Ohio State 6, Baylor 7, as it sits right now.
Now, Terry, you're saying that Baylor beats Kansas State and they're going to jump over TCU, you think? You think they're going to jump Ohio State?
No. I think if Ohio State were to beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship, I think they would be no worse than 5, but they very well could be in that last spot. But I'm just saying what a lot of the analysts were saying over the last week and a half, which is they were kind of speaking for the committee in that if Baylor wins out and Baylor beats Kansas State and the resumes become a little bit more equal, that head-to-head game will play a larger role, and Baylor would probably be the team if a Big 12 team gets a team in there.
Yeah. See, I think that they're not going to – I think that Oregon – I'm sorry. Jeez, I keep looking at the TV. I'm looking at Baylor and TCU, I think they're both be sitting on the outside looking in, to be honest with you, not having that a conference title game, in my opinion. That's how I feel about this.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess we've watched almost every week. We've gotten to see Alabama just about every week because they're Alabama. Do you guys really feel, after watching the whole body of work, that they're the best team in the country?
That's a great question.
I don't.
It really is.
I don't.
Yeah. No, here's the deal, though. I mean, when you look at the landscape of college football, the problem is that there isn't a dominant team in college football this year. There's a lot of really good teams. Alabama's a really good team. I compare Alabama to themselves over the last probably 4 or 5 years. This is the least talented Alabama team that they've had in a while. And they're not as physical at the point of attack. They don't dominate the line of scrimmage like they used to. They can't just turn around and run the football down people's throats like they have in the past 4 or 5 years. And with spotty quarterback play, which they have, they're vulnerable. They can lose to a number of teams out there. So when I look at their complete body of work, to answer your question, are they the best team right now after everything's said and done so far through these weeks that we've had? They might be, but is that difference between them and Oregon and Florida State, is it that great? It's not. It's a very fine line. I think that they might be the best team right now, but I think Oregon, Florida State, I think TCU, I think any of these teams could play with them and they could beat them on any given night. So I just don't think there's any dominant team. There's a lot of good quality teams, but no dominant team.
Agreed. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I mean, if they are truly going to be – they want the top four teams in this country playing right at that in that Final Four. I cannot see them not picking Ohio State as one of the top four teams in this country because they're playing. I think they're playing possibly the best of the four.
They're playing really well right now.
Well, see, and the other thing that I was thinking about too is here Alabama pulls one out of somewhere against LSU last week. And LSU turns around and plays Arkansas and lays an egg against Arkansas team that's not very good. You know, they're matter of fact, they're 1-5 in the conference and 5-5 overall. So, you know, Alabama should have lost that LSU game.
Yep.
You know, just a week ago. So it wasn't like we're talking about that Virginia Tech debacle with Ohio State 10 weeks ago. This is current news. And now they, you know, they played a nice game, no doubt, against Mississippi State. But, like I say, total body of work, I'm not quite so sure.
Yeah. Well, it's a real – I don't really think there's a right answer to this one. I mean, there, I think you can look at it so many different ways. But the truth is, you know, there's the perception of the SEC and there's the reality of the SEC. The perception is that the SEC is still the SEC that they've been the last 8 years. The reality is that when you really look at it and you watch these teams play, and again, it's difficult. So, I mean, you really have to be a fan of the sport and watch, you know, these teams play over the course of the last couple of years. But these teams, the SEC is not as good as it's been. There's no question about that. Even the best teams in the SEC are down. They're down. And LSU's down. Auburn's down a little bit this year. Alabama's down. Mississippi State is a good football team. Is Mississippi State, would they have beaten an Alabama team the last couple of years? No. Would Ole Miss beaten an Alabama team the last couple of years? Absolutely not. The entire SEC West, is they are cannibalizing themselves a little bit, but the entire conference is down from top to bottom a little bit. But the great thing for the SEC is they don't play anybody out of conference. They don't play any true road games out of conference. So what they do is they play four cupcakes. They play themselves. They're all ranked high. So when they beat themselves, there isn't really any negative effect to it. So they continue to just plod along, and they're always going to be in this meandering situation where they have two teams at the top like we have now, where it's really not justifiable. It's not. But that's the reality of kind of the landscape of college football, and it's unfortunate for all the other conferences. The SEC, look, it's the best conference from top to bottom, but it's down this year. I mean, that's the truth.
I mean, you think about this now. I mean, they every week – the big game in the SEC ends on a fluke, in my opinion. There's been like three or four like real fluky games this year. You know, the Ole Miss kid breaking his leg going into the end zone. A couple fumbles late in the game, just stupid fumbles and just upsets being avoided and stuff like that. You were so right in saying that the SEC is as down as they have been in the last 10 years, in my opinion. And then you know what? The SEC East lost the big one, and Todd Gurley blowing his ACL out this week.
That's
devastating to them. That's a big thing for them because you know that was a big thing for the SEC West or whoever it's going to be, Mississippi State, Mississippi or Alabama, who was going to play Georgia. Because that's a lot of points right there, and then them not having Todd Gurley is bad stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's horrible for that kid. Is that not? Put this whole suspension and all this, you know, why college players should be paid and stuff like this. He misses four games for suspension for signing autographs. Goes back for a game or two and blows his knee up. You know,
playing like a madman. It was playing like a madman again.
You know, you're not guaranteed. You're not guaranteed coming back from an ACL, man. I mean, I know it's about 90%, but still, man, I feel bad for that kid.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really.
Well, I think you guys have probably explained it as good as I've heard it explained. I think you're dead on, and I think the thought, Terry, about the four cupcakes and then the attrition within the conference, I think is dead on as well. I 110% agree with both you guys on this. I just couldn't come up with the words quite to get there that you guys have, but I like it a lot. Well, Keith, let's talk about Penn State Temple. It went pretty much the way we thought it would, I think, except the Nittany Lions finally, for the first time, put together a solid rushing performance throughout the entire game and as we've said, going into the game, against a good, solid rush defense in the Owls.
You know, we're talking about last week about having Diffenbach back and Donovan Schmidt back, guys. We have a lot of experience in there, and you have a bunch of young kids playing on the offensive line, tight end, quarterback, and running back. And then, you know, you can look in the line, and those big boys have been, you know, distant through a lot of games, not consistent through a lot of games. And it's a cooling atmosphere in that locker, I mean, in that huddle, in my opinion. I think those guys are looked to as leaders, and I think the younger guys can look up to them, and they can, you know, get the guys to say, hey, it's relaxed, play our game, we'll be all right, we'll be all right, we'll be all right. And as that game wore on, they really picked it up. I mean, pass blocking, run blocking, and everything well. I think it was a 6-3 or a 6-8 or a very, very low scoring first quarter or first half, and then they went off a little bit in the second half. you know. So it was a fun game to watch. I mean, I my prediction was, what, 28-10, so I was pretty much right on with the prediction. And, you know, they're bowl eligible. Did you think we'd be saying that 3 or 4 years ago? So.
Yep. It was awesome. Terry, what did you think?
Yeah, I actually think that was probably the best performance that Penn State had from top to bottom on, you know, in all three facets of the game, really. And like we said, Temple was not a Big Ten team. Temple was in Ohio State, but Temple has a lot of quality football players, and they're well coached, and they play hard, and they're feisty on defense. So with Penn State being able to run the ball as well as they did, you know, I wouldn't dismiss that at all. I know some people might just say, oh, well, it's Temple, but look, Temple's a quality football team, and I thought Penn State played really well. You know, it wasn't perfect, but it definitely was positive in pretty much all facets of what they were doing out there. I thought Hackenberg, you know, did what he had to do out there. As you guys mentioned, the run game was their best performance. The offensive line played well. They opened up some big holes for Lynch, for Belton. You know, both those backs ran hard. You know, they basically just manhandled Temple, which, you know, based on what we said going in, we thought it was going to be a pretty competitive game, hard-fought game. I think we all thought Temple would play a little bit better in that game than they did, but Penn State they controlled the line of scrimmage. The defense was awesome again. They turned Temple over. You know, it was pretty ugly there for Temple down the stretch. So it was a really good performance by Penn State. They're bowl eligible, as you said. I think they're going to go on and they're going to play hard. You know, the next couple games here, they have Illinois, they have Michigan State. They're going to play hard in these games. They'll get another win. I think they'll beat Illinois for sure. And Michigan State will be a really interesting game. So it's positive. You know, it's a positive game for the Nittany Lions. And, you know, that's what they really want. They want to continue as much positive, you know, as much positivity as they can as they roll into signing day, the bowl games. And, you know, next year it's going to really start to be, you know, the time where I think you start to see them turn the corner with the new staff. And, you know, they're going to be a really, really quality football team going forward. And, you know, I'd like to see Hackenberg get back into a rhythm and get back into playing the kind of football that we know he can play. You know, again, Temple has a feisty defense and all that, but I'd really like to see him get right, you know, and play the kind of football that we know he can play. And I think he will, you know, hopefully the next couple of games he'll get back to doing that. You know, his fundamentals, I think he needs to be a little bit more sound with some things. But all in all, it was a good performance for Penn State, and it was great to see them play, you know, a quality game from top to bottom. And, again, it wasn't perfect, but definitely a step in the right direction on so many fronts.
Well, you know, we had talked about turnovers being a key thing, and the Penn State defense came up with 5 of them. And, of course, Penn State gave 3 back. But usually when you get 5 turnovers, you're going to get a win. And rushing the football, Temple, 61 yards against that Penn State defense. They are solid over there.
Very solid.
Bill, you've watched Penn State a long time. Where are you ranking this defense?
Penn State?
You've watched Penn State a lot more years than I have, big boy. I mean, there's a lot of defenses they're racking up right now. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, geez, you know, I hadn't really thought about it, but golly, it's got to be up there in the top 10, I would think. If you look at the stats, I would say it's got to be the. I really, you know what? We'll table that. We'll look at that a little closer. We'll come back and we'll talk more about that next week. How's that?
Yeah.
Because that is a great.
That's a good question.
Great point. You know, I'm trying to think quickly through my head. The only team that probably, you know, thrashed them. Well, no, they didn't. I was going to say it was Ohio State, but no, they held. It wasn't Ohio State. It wasn't Michigan. I'm trying to think who beat – well, Northwestern. Yeah. Northwestern in the first half kind of took advantage of them pretty good, but I'm going off the top of my head.
I hear you. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question for next week. I'm looking into it. I mean, I've been thinking about it. It's pretty impressive, guys.
Hey, Bill, one of the interesting things is Northwestern, what they were able to do to Penn State, where they had success, was in the middle of the field. And that was a product of them having a quarterback that could obviously process information and distribute the football really well. And they were attacking over Hull and attacking over the linebackers, but right in the middle of the field. And a lot of teams haven't been able to do that, one, because they haven't been able to protect their quarterback very well against Penn State. But when Northwestern was able to do that, the center of the field was a little bit soft, which was interesting. But that's where Northwestern had all their success in that game.
You're exactly right. And, Keith, let me throw one back at you from the defensive side. Right. Are two of those guys on that defense All-Americans?
Wow. You know, the only two guys I would think about that had a, who would have a chance would be Zettel and Hull. That's my two who I think would have any kind of consideration to be All-American. I think Hull might be a shoo-in just because he is a Penn State linebacker. We have that name, and plus he has all those tackles. But
all the sacks, yeah.
You guys tell me if you have seen a better defensive tackle than Anthony Zettel the way he's been playing this year.
You know who he reminds me of, Keith, going back in the day? You played against him with him. Lou Benfatti,
all right, good call.
He reminds me of Lou Benfatti.
I like the Brandon Noble comparison, my personal opinion.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, they're very similar players, but Lou was never-ending, and Brandon was just a man amongst boys athletically. I mean, I played with Lou for 3 and then Brandon for 4, and very similar players, and Zettel looks a lot like the both.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things I wanted to point out was, how about the play of Johnson the last 2 or 3 weeks, opposite of Zettel, obviously. I mean, he's been pretty darn stout. He's been really stout.
Yeah.
There were
people up here who were in the know who kept on saying that, how are they going to replace Larry Johnson? How are they going to replace Larry Johnson? How is this going to happen? And tell you what, man, Sean Spence has really turned a lot of heads this year with what he's doing on the field as well as recruiting. You know, almost like a Larry Johnson 20 years younger type of guy. He has these guys balling. He's killing it recruiting, so.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, they're fun to watch. And there was a time early in the game, and I was watching a lot. I had to jump into a little pub on the corner there in Tempe to watch the game. So I didn't get to hear a lot of it, but I got to see almost all of it. But the thing that I noticed early in the game when they went into that dime package, it looked like the freshman team out there. They had
freshmen
all over the field playing.
Yeah,
I was thinking to myself,
too, huh?
Man, they're going to just keep getting better and better and better.
Starts next year, buddy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Marcus Allen is the one who really impressed me the most, jumping out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's like a big kid right there, like a freshman kid, making plays out there. He looks like I said it a couple weeks ago, he looks like you would see as an Ohio State safety, you know, like a 6'3" kid, 220, can come up and knock your head off as well as make some plays. And, you're right. I mean, he's definitely going younger with his guys that are out there. You're looking at Mike Jezicki, he's out there at tight end now a lot more than we have seen before. A lot of the defensive backs there are almost all young bucks. There's cool, man.
Yeah, and I was going to mention Gazicki too, because he's one that came to my mind as well, because, you know, they've got all this stockpile of tight ends, and his name wasn't one that was being discussed early in the season, but he's sure getting a lot of PT now.
Yeah. I actually went to a practice on Friday. I had a friend in town who I brought up here as a guest of Penn State, a wounded veteran from Afghanistan. So brought him over to practice on Friday afternoon. It's just a walkthrough. And we're sitting on the sidelines, and I kept on, like, saying, who the hell is this kid? Who is this, like, tall, thick, gangly kid? And I'm looking at him. I'm like, you know, they have the hands team out there, and he's out there. They have the punt team out there, and he's out there. And I'm like, I think that's – they didn't even have jerseys on. I said, I think that's Jezicki. You know, he has this big mutant body, and he's 19, 18, 19 years old, and he is just going to grow more and more and more.
So they're loaded at that position. And I guess I think we would probably we would be remiss if we didn't talk for just a minute about Christian Hackenberg, because I don't know, guys. I'm sure not going to give up on him, because I tooted his horn so much early. But, boy, he's just not – he's not playing well. He just doesn't – and I think the thing that bothers me the most is just he seems so inaccurate.
Yeah, Bill. I mean, from my perspective, I mean, as a former quarterback, not at that level, but as a former, you know, somebody that played that position and, you know, someone that's played college athletics and all that, for me, it's really simple. It comes down to confidence. I mean, in anything in life, really, you could look at anything that we do in and around athletics or in sales or whatever it is that you do as a profession. It comes down to confidence, and he's obviously been stripped of a lot of his confidence over the course of the season, mainly because the offensive line just hasn't really provided a lot of stability for him. You know, he has a lot of young players around him at the skill positions. You know, it's a culmination of a lot of things, a lot of hits that he's taken, you know, a new system again that we talked about at the beginning of the year. So, unfortunately for him, he's regressed a little bit. You know, his mechanics have obviously, you know, he's not crisp right now. It's pretty much in every facet of what you have to do as a quarterback, it's just not really going smoothly for him. And it's really a product of him just not being quite as confident as he once was. You know, he's probably second-guessing himself, and it's unfortunate because from a physical standpoint, as we've all gushed about this kid, he is so gifted. He is so talented. He has poise. He's very smart. He can process information. He can make every single throw that you would want your quarterback to make in a pro-style offense. Right now, for me, it's simply just about confidence, and he's got to get back on track. They got to figure out a way, whether it's getting in some early throws, some easy throws. You know, sometimes I think we kind of forget that it almost seems like because he's such a polished young man, they put so much on his plate. They've given him so much to do. You know, I think we take that for granted sometimes that he's a 19-year-old kid. And he has, you know, like I said, he's such a poised individual that we kind of gloss over that. But, you know, he's a young guy. His second year in college football, and it's the most difficult position to play, and he's handled it really well. You know, this has been a rough patch, but I just think his confidence is wavering a little bit, and it's been wavering for a while, and I'd really like to see him get back on track because there's very few kids in the country that are as talented as he is.
Okay. Well, hey, Keith, I want to jump in here and thank our sponsor right quick, but then I want to come back to you and talk a little Penn State free report, NCAA, and all that garbage that happened. We talked a lot about that on Tuesday, and a lot came out on Wednesday, so I'd like to talk to you some about that, but let me get our word in for our sponsor before we discuss that. So if you like shopping online, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com. That's South Beach Shopping. And click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the all stores tab and check out all 3,000 plus network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have questions, click on the contact us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. And by the way, fellas, I've already started using it for my Christmas shopping. So you can go right on there
Very
and
cool.
get cash back on everything you buy from your Christmas gifts. So it all works out. All right. Well, Keith, let's. I kind of laid it out for us. What were your thoughts of this whole mess with the NCAA? It almost looks like the NCAA, the free group, and maybe even the Big Ten were all on this and had the end predicted and then made the story fit the end. What do you think?
That's exactly what I'm looking at it. I mean, this is what has been released so far from the you know, all the lawsuits against the NCAA and from the Paterno family and the Senator Cormann and McCord lawsuit. It's just so much information coming out every couple of days here. It's just hard to understand. But the ones that really get me are the I don't want to use the word collusion, but, I mean, I'm really trying to think of another word. Why in the hell would an independent person come in being paid by Penn State to do an independent investigation who in his contract says, you know, it's no stone unturned, everybody's going to be under a microscope, both sides are not going to be happy about this, and then 2 weeks later they're meeting with the NCAA and the Big Ten. Like, what's going on here? You know, how independent is that? And are you really doing, you know, what kind of job are you doing, in my opinion? You know, so the easiest way to look at it is somebody told me, they said, you think about it, the NCAA wrote a crib notes version or a cliff notes version of the Free report, pretty much. And then Lou Free went in there and he filled out all the outline and, I guess the word was that the NCAA, I mean, it's just amazing the stuff that they're writing on these emails about this, about meeting this person, and how a member of the Board of Trustees, me and Ken Frazier, the head of our Board of Trustees, is the one who set them all up together. It's like, okay, what's going on here, you know? I mean, these are ones that they have, there are ones out there that they don't want put into, written, I mean, released. So it's like they okayed the release of these or had to release these. I can't imagine what's actually going to be on the ones that they don't want released. You know, it's like the NCAA went to the free report and went to the free group and then in the Big Ten and said lack of institutional control. And then they worked backwards from that. How can we get this on Penn State? How can this happen? We need to make a name for themselves using PR by punishing us. And I don't know if it was last week that I was going crazy, but you're playing with the 2011-12-13 Penn State football teams. You're just, you know, they're just little pawns in your game. I mean, that's insane. And just for their public image, because Mark Emmert is more worried about his public image than he is the people who pay his salary, and the reason he's in this position is because of athletes. And, you know, I just can't imagine being a member of those teams and hearing that the president of the NCAA coming out and saying that, you know, that, you know, it's a public relations thing we need to have with them. And, you know, as an ex-player, I'd be furious. If I was on those teams that were handicapped, like the Mike Maldy, Gerald Hodges, Zordich teams, and Matt McLaurin, I mean, with the free agencies, what we call it up here, with Silas Red transferring, all those guys transferring to their school, we call those free agents kids. So, I mean, it's unbelievable that the guy still has a job, and it's, the more and more is going to come out, and more people are going to burn for it, and, you know, and rightfully so.
Terry, what was your take after reading that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing to remember about the NCAA as it pertains to like infractions cases is that they don't have any subpoena power, so they really can't investigate the way that you need to investigate anything that's out there to the degree that, you know, you would want to see from a group that's overseeing people. So it was easy for them to kind of jump on board with the free report because they did the work for them. Even though it was, obviously they didn't do their due diligence in terms of, you know, vetting what those guys came up with. But they have really no power, and they basically just bullied Penn State into just going along with, you know, something that, you know, another independent group kind of trumped up. So, you know, I think Penn State should have fought a lot harder, you know, early on. And now that we're finding out all of this, like, you know, collusion, as you guys use that word, you know, all of this, you know, collective, you know, bargaining and discussions that were going on. It's a shame. I mean, I just feel really bad for the university. I feel bad because, you know what, no matter what happens, the perception of Penn State from the outside looking in is still going to be marred by all of this stuff that's gone on. And the people that really should be the ones that should be perceived in a negative fashion are the NCAA, for the corrupt group that they are. They've been corrupt for a long time, and it's an absolute shame. You know, Penn State, they didn't deserve this. Obviously, the stuff that went on, you know, the NCAA really had no business being involved in this from the get-go. It's just a complete unfortunate situation for everyone involved. And I hope the NCAA just gets burned for their activity on this front with Penn State and, you know, with all this stuff that's gone on. And, you know, I can't wait to just, you know, see all of the details and see who was involved. I mean, I want to see, you know, as far up as Emirate and, you know, all the things that are going on, it's just going to be fantastic to kind of put the NCAA on display and just show them for, you know, who they really are. And, you know, unfortunately, the only negative thing about doing that is I think it may change the dynamic of college athletics as we know it. But you know what? You know, maybe it'll be better. Maybe it will just be better off without having a group that's corrupt like this. But as it pertains to Penn State and, you know, the more information we get, it obviously just, you know, paints a better picture. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the paternal family and everybody involved and, you know, the university itself can really mend and you know, hopefully be seen in a better light by a lot of the people on the outside looking in, because the NCAA just really botched this whole thing, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah. And
well, I sure just hope that it can be straightened out.
Real quick, I just want to say this, and I say it every week, and we need to have a big discussion on that. Who when the NCAA is done, which will be within the next 6 months, they're going to cease to exist, who is going to run major college athletics? That is a four-hour show in itself right there, guys.
ESPN, the worldwide leader.
The commissioner of the Big Ten and the commissioner of the SEC, Mike Slive. That's who's going to run the NCAA.
Yep,
the SEC, your ESPN, and Condoleezza Rice and Archie Manning.
It's crazy, right, guys? I mean, when you got to think about that, I mean, I know a guy on the inside who you know, he's working with the lawsuit pretty closely, and I say, well, what are the plans? Who is going to run the NCAA when it goes away? And you know, it's going away, guys. There's no doubt about it. Not just the Penn State thing, the Miami thing, the USC situation, and then the one that just is absolutely blows my mind is this North Carolina situation down there with the fake classes. I mean, they are just going to – why are they not trying to burn North Carolina coaches down in the history of their program with the Joe Paterno? It's just insane.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
Yep. Well, okay. Well, let's we'll come back. We'll make some few notes and we'll put this stuff together for next week. We'll talk some more about it. This is great stuff. But Terry, let's we've eaten into a little bit of our time, so let's cut this down just a little bit. But let's talk a little bit. Get your insight on both the Mississippi State Alabama game and the Miami Florida State games.
Yeah, absolutely. Both games were really obviously they were interesting to watch, very entertaining. You know, you kind of talked a little bit about Florida State and Miami, so I'll just kind of gloss over that game a little bit. But, you know, Miami played a great game. I mean, they were really well prepared. You know, we know they have athletes. They matched athlete for athlete at pretty much every position. You know, Miami, in a lot of ways, they probably should have won that game. But the one thing that we all kind of talked about at the end of the day, and I picked Florida State myself, was that, you know, Jameis Winston, when you look at Brad Kyle, who played really well in the first half and then kind of struggled a little bit in the second half, well, for me, it was always going to come down to, you know, who was going to be able to make plays there in the second half. And with Jameis Winston, for all the off-the-field stuff that we've seen, you know, for all the things that have been said about him, the kid's a really good football player. He's a really good quarterback. And, you know, he made some plays. And obviously the defense, Jalen Ramsey, who, you know, as a USC fan, I'm very familiar with him. He was a USC recruit for a long time. He's a tremendous football player, and he played great in that game. And he came up with that interception there at the end of the game. But, you know, Miami ran the ball well. They distributed the football in the first half. They were explosive. You know, they really challenged Florida State in so many ways. But Florida State, you know, they just found a way. This is 26 games in a row, I believe. You know, Jameis Winston, Jimbo Fisher, they just seemingly find a way to win each week. And I like how you put them at number one because, you know, they just continue to just find ways to be that team, to stay undefeated, to have a chance in the playoffs. So it was a great game to watch. Miami played their hearts out. You know, I kind of felt for them in that game. But Florida State just has a knack of finding a way to do it, and you got to give them a lot of credit for that. The Mississippi State-Alabama game, I felt like Alabama would win that game going away. They had many opportunities to probably pull away and win that game by maybe 2-3 touchdowns. Mississippi State did not play well in that game. As you said, Alabama is most certainly the better team. Alabama is pretty much, you know, better at every single position. You know, I mean, when you look at the Alabama's five-star across the board, the only position I think Mississippi State's really better at is at quarterback. And Alabama did a really good job of kind of, you know, curtailing Dak Prescott from being effective in the run game. And that was really the big factor in this one, is that Mississippi State never was really fluid. They weren't efficient. They weren't effective in the run game. And that really slowed down what they like to do. They forced Dak Prescott to throw the ball, and that late touchdown made the game a little closer than what it really was. Alabama is the better team. Alabama is, you know, they're a really good team at home. They're physical. You know, as we said, they're not the Alabama that we've seen the last 4 or 5 years, but they're better than Mississippi State, and they deserve to win that game. And, you know, Lane Kiffin's doing a really good job with that offense, and he's done a good job with, you know, with the quarterback. Sims has definitely struggled on the road. He's had some good games at home. You know, he played okay in this game. He was solid. You know, he had some, you know, he made some good throws, made some good plays. He ran the ball when he had to. You know, again, another entertaining SEC game. You got to give them credit on this front. It's always a physical game. It's a good brand of football for the most part. One of the things that really lacks in my mind in the SEC is the quarterback play in terms of distributing the football through the air. And, you know, in this game it wasn't great. But But Alabama's a really good football team. They deserve to win the game. That crowd is absolutely insane. It's a great atmosphere there in T-Town. And, you know, I did pick Alabama, as I said, to win that game. I thought they'd win that game. I thought it would be going away. That late touchdown kind of made the game a little closer. It wasn't really indicative of how that game was played. But in my mind, both of those games were a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, I look forward to a couple more weeks here of some great college football. But both great games.
Keith, you get to see those games?
A little bit. You know, nothing. I mean, I watched the Florida State-Miami game. You know, I got to think, Bill, you got a good question for you again. And, you know, was that enough for D'Onofrio to keep his job? I think Al's got out Golden State for the year, my opinion. But I know that D'Onofrio was catching a lot of grief before the season about how he's playing. But and then that defense was playing great yesterday on Saturday. They played fantastic. I hate to see them lose that how they did.
Yeah, they're after both those guys again this week after that loss. And you know, I guess the only thing I would say negative towards Miami in that game is I think they had their foot on their throat and they let it off. You know, the offense got a little conservative, I thought, in the second half, and defensively they seemed to get into a little bit of a rut where they were only blitzing on third downs. And Florida State was picking that blitz up on third down, and Winston, as Terry said, was making plays. And you could feel the momentum changing as you were watching the game. So, but I think, you know, I've watched almost all the Miami games since Al went down there, and I think that is the best all-around effort that I've seen that team put together in his time in South Beach.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I guess, Keith, I think so. I think so. Just don't go lay an egg at Virginia this week.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's just, you know, they shouldn't have lost that game, in my opinion. But, I mean, you got to give the Seminoles a lot of credit for, again. Again, I mean, they were saying it every week. They're taking everybody's best shot right now. And they're undefeated right now. That Louisville game a couple weeks ago, I mean, they were down, what, 21-0, 28-7, and they come back and win that game. And then, you know, Miami's up on them pretty good this week. And, you know, as much as an idiot the kid is a player. The kid makes things happen. He's a special player. I mean, he is as advertised. You know, he is the Heisman Trophy winner from last year. And too much negative stuff for him this year to possibly win that trophy, but just a special player and we're watching out there. I mean, again, everybody's throwing their best shots at him, and he just takes it, rolls with it, and just goes with it.
Absolutely. Well, Keith, you know, I had a real strong feeling and then let my dumb brain intercept me here because I liked Wisconsin a lot in this game against Nebraska and ended up taking Nebraska for some reason. But what in the world happened to the Nebraska defense? Melvin Gordon, 25 carries, 408 yards, all-time record. It looks like Wisconsin-Ohio State matchup is lining up for the Big Ten championship game.
That's just unbelievable. 25 carries, 408 yards. That's
And didn't play the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I know. Just what do you think? If Brett Bielema is still there, you think he's still running that ball in the fourth quarter?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, we were all complaining about Wisconsin not having a quarterback, but the running back running for 408 yards, you sure as hell don't need a quarterback out there. great job by the Badgers, just taking it out of them, and what a great game to watch, too, in the elements like that and cold, and I love that stuff.
Yeah. Jerry, did you get to see any of that game? I did not get to see much of that game with my other activities I had going on.
Oh, absolutely. You're talking about Wisconsin, right? Melvin Gordon, he went absolutely bonkers. I mean, that was one of the greatest performances I've ever seen out of a running back in my short life. But Wisconsin, they're a really good football team. And how about that defense? That defense, which, you know, we talked about Penn State's defense and how dominant they've been. Wisconsin is a really, really quality defense as well. And I'll tell you what, that game, if Wisconsin makes it to the Big Ten championship, Ohio State, that's going to be a very interesting football game because Wisconsin can do a lot of things that, you know, if I were an Ohio State fan, I probably would be a little concerned about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Wisconsin's been running the football for a long time, and they've been running it pretty well. Which one of those guys? I saw it go across the bottom line, but one of the Wisconsin running backs that's in the NFL tweeted something about Wisconsin running backs are now the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history, now have the number one rushing game in NCAA history, and there was one other thing, and it was three different guys. Ron Dane was one, Melvin Gordon was the other,
and
the
Monty
new
Ball.
Actually
Monty
tweeted
Ball.
It was the third one.
Yep.
Monte Ball. Yeah, and what did he do? I forget. But anyway, there was three Wisconsin backs that hold all three things.
Yeah, he holds the record for touchdowns, I believe.
Yeah, Dane's the all-time leading rusher in the NCAA history. And obviously Gordon has a single game.
Gotcha. Well, I'll tell you what, that as you mentioned, that Wisconsin-Ohio State matchup, if it comes to pass, which it most likely will be one we'll be talking about for sure, because that's going to be a good one. That's not an easy gimme for Ohio State, I don't think.
No, absolutely not.
By the way, speaking of coaches and D'Onofrio and all that, Keith, Will Muschamp, our buddy, is out at Florida. Who's going to be next? And by the way, I'll be at the Swamp this Saturday as Eastern Kentucky. My son's team is going to visit the Gators. So the Gators playing that, Terry, I don't know if that fits into that cupcake, SEC cupcake you mentioned earlier, but it's a level down game for the Gators. But they're getting to play a 9-2 Division I AA team. So Muschamp's out. Who's next? Brady Hoke?
Oh, who's next?
I mean, that was my thing all year was who was going down first, Muschamp or Brady Hoke, and Brady Hoke survived, so survived this far.
Yeah.
I think Brady
Hoke will be next.
Yeah, Hoke's when Ohio State goes up there and whoops that behind there. I mean, I don't think Hoke's going to make the claim. He's not going to make it out of there.
You think?
Yeah. See, I mean, you're talking about this Ohio State-Wisconsin matchup late in the season, and, you know, that Michigan game is one of those games, man, you never know what's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I mean, we're talking about them in the Final Four. They still got to get to their biggest rival. And then, you know, then the more conversation.
Yeah, I sure have to think that they're a lot better than Ohio State's just so much better than Michigan, I think.
Yep.
But whoever I pick will certainly lose, so we'll get to that as well.
here's a good way to win tonight. Just play Terry's first one. Whoever he picks, we just ride along with him.
Oh,
yeah,
man,
yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think I am the lead picker tonight. I think I have to go first, and that's not good for I know Coach Franklin is probably sitting there just waiting for me to say Penn State, and he's going to call me. And say, why did you do that to me?
That's funny.
So let's talk about our picks right quick. Terry has now just run away and hid from us, Keith. A 5-1 week, which was just an absolutely great week, especially with the games that were being played. Your only loss, Terry, was who? You took
Auburn.
You took Auburn, right. You were the only – that was your only loss. That's a great week. You picked the Alabama-Mississippi State, right. You were the only one of us to pick Nebraska to beat Wisconsin, although I wanted to. We went with our heart on Nebraska – or on Miami, and you went with your brain and took Florida State. So you ended up 5-1. Keith, 3-3. I'm 2-4. So right now, Keith – or Terry, you have a 6-game lead over me. And a 10-game lead over Keith. I think you're pretty good shape because the schedule's thinning out here as we go a little further along.
Well, don't worry about it. You know, he'll make the Final Four, so that's good to know. We have at least one guy
making
the
Final Four. That's right. But you know, if we continue on and we pick all 476 bowl games,
we
can catch them, Keith.
I want to use the spreads.
All right. There you go.
I'm a bigger fan
of that. We'll do
that
as well. All right, let's go. Let's make our picks. Not a whole lot of games, by the way, as I mentioned to you guys, but for the listeners, there is not a top 20 matchup this whole week, which kind of crazy with all the great games that have been going on. But things are winding down. So we got Penn State at Illinois. Illinois is actually not won a road game, but they have won some home games. But I have rode Penn State out all along, and I'm going to do it again. I'm going Nittany Lions. Keith, you're second.
I had the Nittany Kittens picking. I'm actually going to call for the shutout this week, 31-0.
Ooh. Wow.
There's your woodshed, boys.
Your zero doesn't surprise me. 31, I'm not so sure about that, but I'll take it.
What I said on Final State Magazine today, and my prediction is, pick sixes are contagious, boys.
Oh, absolutely.
I will.
All right, Terry, who do you have?
I'm going to go Penn State as well.
All right. Illinois.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, Illinois beat Minnesota at home this year, so I mean you're right. They're not slouches at home.
Yeah, but I think they're 0-4 on the road. But this game's at home, so maybe they'll play a little bit better there.
Yeah.
Okay, Villanova at Delaware. I'm going Wildcats.
Yeah. I got 11-2.
All right.
I'll go Villanova as well, guys.
All right. Okay, USC, UCLA. I know you guys are going USC, so I'm going to pick up a game here, and I'm going Bruins.
Your suspicions are correct, sir.
USC. Terry.
Who'd you take, Keith?
I took the Trojans. They're one of my Final Four,
okay.
So.
Well, I'm gonna go with the heart this week, guys. I'm gonna take USC, but remember, I did pick UCLA to win the division. But I'm going USC this week, going with the heart.
There you go.
Number 13, Kansas State at West Virginia, unranked West Virginia. I thought this looked like kind of an interesting game, and I may surprise you. I'm going West Virginia at home. If this was at Kansas State, I would certainly take Kansas State, but I'm going to go with West Virginia, especially if it's colder than heck, which it looks like it might be. I'm going to ride out the Mountaineers on this one.
I'll go with the Wildcats of Kansas State on this week. Just catch a game up on you, try to at least.
All right.
I will go. I'm going to go West Virginia as well.
Woo-hoo! Oh,
how
about that? All right, how about this one I thought was interesting, too. And, boy, what a falling like a rock, the Fighting Irish at the number 18th. They're at home. They're playing Louisville this weekend, who I'm not quite sure about either. Weather's going to be terrible. But I think I'm going to take Louisville in this game.
Notre Dame in one of their 82 home games this year. I'm going to take them over the Louisville Cardinals this week, so.
All right.
I'm gonna go Notre Dame at home. I think they'll right the ship for 1 week prior to going out to USC. I'll take Notre Dame to beat Louisville at home.
Well, you know what? As high as I was on Notre Dame, they've just stunk it up. So I'm falling off on those guys. So all right. Well, we got a little mixture in the batch this week. So that's good. That's a good thing. All right. Well, that already brings us to the top of our hour again. We'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and the Goon, Keith Conlon, for their great insight. We'd like to remind our listeners that we'll be back next Tuesday night, Thanksgiving Tuesday, November 25th at 7 p.m. to talk about last weekend's games, as well as the upcoming week. You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show.
The hyperbole is done. Now we can finally play the game.
Look at that. Oh, my goodness. One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman. Intercepted by Teague. George Teague to the end zone. Touchdown. We're going to play football. Yippee. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Touchdown.
ball goes into the end zone, and it is incomplete. Hold the phone, everybody. There's a penalty flag thrown, and I think it's against Miami. The royalty of college football is in assembly at the Rose Bowl 2016.